Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this a special episode where we're going to recap The Last of Us episode 4, because here we are continuing on with our Last of Us HBO recap series. And if you're playing along at home, you might realize we're wearing the exact same clothes that we wore on episode 19 of the regular podcast. And guess what, everybody? We're recording back to back through the magic of the internet here. Here we are to talk about The Last of Us again. Let's get right into it, Kate. What did you think of episode 4? And where do you want to start?
Hey, this show just continues to hit. Like, every episode so far has been phenomenal. They have not dropped the ball on anything. I want to start right at the beginning with one of my favorite things they've added back to this show. And starts out cute at the beginning and then really closes off the episode a bit emotionally, is that Ellie has her pun book back. And I will say to you, every single one of these puns is a 10 out of 10 for quality. And I believe genuinely the exact same puns that she recounts in the games, which is just a cute little touch as well. I guess maybe ruins the joke because you know all the punchlines.
Yeah, but, as if you're watching for the jokes.
Well, I mean, the Scarecrow one is a particularly good one, I must say.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I really appreciated the humor in this episode. I think it was a much needed break from, oh my god, like, it was just so emotional last week. I still had it on my mind, like, throughout the week, and seeing other people's takes and whatnot, like, it was just something else. And, you know, spoilers, I guess, moving ahead, but for those of us that have played the game, we know where episode 5 is going, and god, we're gonna be in for it again. So I'm glad we got a little bit more levity in this one, although I guess we'll get into it, but there was some really heavy stuff that happened in this one as well.
Yeah, I guess I must say at the top of the show as well, for those keeping count, I am now 2-2. I've evened the score out against HBO and The Last of Us to see how many episodes they can make me cry. So we're all tied up. I'm no longer losing. But with how this episode ends, oh god, am I kind of in for a rough time next episode, I feel.
Yeah, I don't think there's no way we're not crying next episode. But we'll save that for a review of the fifth one. So in this episode, I guess, starts off, Ellie obviously has a gun now. She had stolen it at the end of last episode, and starts off with her there, and this is sort of Joel and Ellie's first time they're really getting, you know, an extended scene kind of together in the car. They're traveling a distance, and they just sort of have that we got to kill some time together sort of moment where they're not really getting attacked, and you know, they're sort of having their first initial bonding time, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of this episode was very, like, kind of quiet moments between the two, and they were phenomenal. Like, I was on, you know, just as enthralled by this episode in the moments where they're just sitting in the car talking as I am in the more, like, action-packed scenes. So that's a testament to just how good the characters are playing these roles, how amazing the dialogue is. Although, ironically, like, a lot of the few big moments in this where they're having conversations are directly, like, just straight pulled from the game, which is really cute. But I mean, the game was well written too, so no problems there. But yeah, we've got, I guess he started out, we're in the car, right? We've got that she's found Bill's comic book, or not comic book, sorry, his, like, porn magazine.
Yeah.
Which is just from exactly how the game plays. Like, and Joel's like, oh god, Ellie, like, don't look at that. It's not for kids.
Yeah. And it's funny,
kind of
too.
She's giving him a hard time, kind of pushing back on it a little bit, joking around with him.
Yeah, the interaction there is really funny. Like, it actually made me laugh, too, the way, like, the characters just play it perfectly, right? And the way she delivers that line, she's, like, asks him a question. She's like, oh, I'm fucking with you. Like, I know what's gone on here. It's pretty funny. You know what I appreciated, too, like, even aside from their kind of interaction in the car, is, like, I loved the sort of quick glimpse that we got of some of the scenery of the travel, because in the game you're kind of limited to the locations where you're playing through, but just to get a quick glimpse, like, when they're in the car, you see, like, a bridge with a train on it that's sort of collapsed over time, you know, it's just been eroded, and they pass, like, a theme park, and you see, like, what used to be, like, a roller coaster, and I guess it's still there, and, like, the Ferris wheel and stuff, but it's just obviously so not taken care of, and it's just fleshing that world out a little bit more beyond what the game was able to show us within its scope.
And you get, like, I can't remember if it's, like, buffalo or bison, what exactly the difference is between the two of those, but I know, like, there was a herd of them just on the side of the road, which get like a nice little a shot to themselves. And I think one of the things when America was being like more like settled, they were like hunted to like near extinction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of like that you have a few scenes where it's sort of showing how nature is kind of like growing back. You know, it's the same kind of idea of like everything's covered in moss and, you know, there's like those pools in the hotel now. And, you know, everything's covered in plant life. And there's almost like a bit of a beauty to the world in the absence of all like humans and technology. And obviously it's still a really somber show overall, but there are these small moments of beauty and just kind of life flourishing, which I really like and hope we get to see more glimpses of that as the show continues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good juxtaposition of like, you know, the zombies and all the dark stuff that's also taking over in a different way. Very interesting, yeah. So as people who have played the game will know, this is the big sort of ambush episode. And as Joel and Ellie are in the car, they eventually come to, I guess, the sort of destination, because at this point they're trying to get across the country to get Ellie delivered and go find Joel's brother. And they kind of mm-hmm. come across this I guess it's like a traffic jam and this bridge that they can't really get around. And Joel immediately, you can tell, he's like, oh, fuck, like I've been here before. Like, I know something's going on. And he tells Ellie to wait in the car and goes and checks it out. And, you know, I think against his better judgment, he kind of makes a bad call. And mm-hmm. it seems to me like he really knows he probably should avoid this area completely because of what's gone on. But at the same time, he's kind of peeking around. He's like, oh, there's a straight way through the road there. Like, let's just try it. Screw it. And it does turn out like they run into some pretty scary people very shortly afterwards. And really, the stakes just accelerate so quickly after that moment compared to like 2 minutes previous when they were telling jokes in the car like that.
Yeah, exactly. It is a really big departure from that. And again, a big important scene from the game. And we get a little bit more of kind of like the gritty reality of this world and what Joel's done and kind of, you know, how far he has fallen from his like life before the outbreak. Like, he sees the ambush and he immediately recognizes it and he just floors it. It's very similar to the game, right? He's like, Ellie, put your seatbelt on, like, shit's yeah, and about that to guy happen.
Drops the cinder block through their windshield.
Oh, like, my holy god shit. Yeah, and they crash into the laundromat. Like, it was intense. But Joel kind of like, Ellie asks him later, like, how did you know it was a trap? And Joel's like, well, I've been on both sides, right? So there's, you know, this is happening in the world, and we want Joel to kind of be this hero character, right? Like, he's our perspective. We see the good in him, and we really want that catharsis of him, like, finally taking that position of, like, a father figure and a character we root for. But there's also that aspect of Joel that we can't get rid of. And sure, he was pushed to do terrible things by being stuck in a circumstance where it was life or death. But still, like, Joel is definitely capable of doing some really fucked up and like horrific things in the pursuit of survival. And it's I think it's important that they kind of have those little lines to tell you, because in the game, like, there's so much violence, right? Like, there's so many, you kill a million people in The Last of Us, right? Because that's the gameplay does that function for you. So I think it's important that the show has these little lines of like, just remember, like, Joel has had a really rough go of it as well, and done some things that he's gonna carry with him for the rest of his life, even if it ends up working out here with Ellie. So
yeah exactly. I like the way they contextualize that, and they show us that by like having us find that out through Ellie's questioning as well. Like, it's very mm-hmm. organic, and like, she would be asking him that. It's not like they've got her to ask him because we need to find out. Like, it's very mm-hmm. natural the way they deliver it. But so mm-hmm. what ends up happening basically is they get in this accident, and they're getting attacked because these people are like wanting to kill them, right? And Joel begins to shoot back, and he just tells Ellie, like, go hide behind this wall, you know, and I'm gonna protect you, like, nothing will happen. And she's like, you know, basically hiding for her life while hoping Joel doesn't get shot. Very emotional stakes. And Joel, of course, ends up shooting one of the people attacking. And what I really loved from, you know, a comparison to the game is, like, you don't often hear, like, the perspective of the enemies, quote unquote. Like, you know, if you're watching a lot of action movies, you're the main character's gunning guys down, like James Bond or whoever it is. Like, those guys die and like nothing's ever said. But in The Last of Us, and I think this really does a good job of it illustrating what you're saying about Joel and like how his past is checkered and he's not just like this hero, like father figure. Like, they really make you feel like, oh my God, like what did Joel just do? Because on the end of the villain, like Joel shoots that guy and like you can hear them yelling in the distance, like the other people in that group, they're like, oh my God, like they got Brian, they got fucking Brian. Like they really humanize it in like that really subtle way, but it really rings home. I think they make it really obvious, and these people sound distraught, and they're like, they just lost one of their own, you know, and they're, to them, Joel is nothing but an attacker, like here to come and steal their stuff. And anyway, the whole thing ends up, and you know, whatever happens with Ellie, Joel gets surprised. He's kind of like pinned down, and Ellie ends up having to pull that gun that she found, and it just is like, yeah, really high stakes, and she ends up shooting the guy, and obviously it's, yeah, I don't know, like where do you think with this? I feel like I'm just rambling now because it's all so fresh.
Okay, well, I think there's two things we need to talk about of this. Is one, how Ellie and Joel's relationship kind of starts at the beginning of the episode and where it ends off on. And this is an important scene that sort of bridges it. And two, oh my God, that kid that Ellie ends up shooting and how he responds to it is probably one of the most difficult things that the show has made us watch so far. And I guess, you know, with saying that, I won't bounce back to the first thing. We can stick on this, but oh my God, that kid, when he realized that he was going to die and he starts to reason with them, he's like, please, like he's begging for his life. He introduces himself, like he's like, you don't have to do this, like, you know, we can, it's all a misunderstanding, like I'll tell them, like, please don't kill me. And holy shit, like, I don't know about you, but I bought into that 100%, like the desperation of this poor kid who, like, you do not want Joel to hurt this guy, but you know that he has to. And it's just horrific to watch.
Mm-hmm. And they cut away too. And like, he tells Ellie to go back behind the wall. And you, like, the second he said that, because in my mind, I was like, oh, like this guy's going to die for sure. But there was that part of me that was like, oh, maybe he'll like shoot him in the knees or something and like they'll get out of there. But you can't because they're going to get hunted down. Like, this is the world they live in now. And Joel understands that. And he's just like, get behind the wall, Ellie. And then you hear the gunshot and you know that that kid, and you know, like when you think about it, that kid probably is just like, he's finally old enough and that group needs another person in their military. So they've told him like he's going to go and help the guys, you know, like, yeah, I felt really bad.
It's not like, you know, like, and you can say that's kind of probably the situation Joel was in at one point, right? Like, they're fighting for their survival. And this kid is, he's young, right? Like, he's one in charge. He's the equivalent of like when someone comes in and they complain about the prices at the grocery store. And he's like, oh, I'm just the cashier, man. Like, what am I supposed to do about it? Like, he's not responsible, right? He's complicit. And that makes it so much worse.
Yeah, it does. So yeah, that scene was definitely the highlight of the episode, I think, for me, in terms of like the most impactful scene. Although it was impactful, just moving on, I guess, after that. Now you get introduced to this one guy. He's kind of like, you know, the army guy with the beard. And
talked about that army guy with the beard, the one that hangs out with Yellow Jacket Girl. I'll be honest, I can't think of what her name is, because I just called her Shauna.
Yeah. Her name is she's so good in Yellow Jacket. Melanie Linsky.
Melanie. So she, Melanie is,
her name's Kathleen. Kathleen is the character. Kathleen. Yeah. Melanie Linsky is the actress.
Right. So Kathleen is a purely created for the show character. I believe maybe the first one we've seen, unless like, you know,
well, I mean, this military guy is probably.
Yeah, exactly. This is the kind of like new faction. I guess it's kind of nice they're giving her a figurehead, something a little bit more than just raiders or like Fedra agents, or, you know, something giving a little bit more of a character.
They're just giving us more of a glimpse. Like, this ambush still happened in the game, but you just never got to see kind of who the organizers were and stuff like that.
Exactly. And just a little bit more extra world building of kind of like what different factions have risen up and what kind of, you know, situations people are in. But the fun fact is the guy that's with her, the army guy, that is Tommy's voice actor from the video games.
No way. A lot of
the voice a lot of the voice actors make small cameo roles. Yeah. Like, we know that Joel and Ellie's voice actors.
We've been looking for those guys, yeah.
Yeah, very famous voice actors. They've not shown up yet. Apparently this was Tommy, so how fun is that?
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And of course, the Yellow Jackets actress was in there, like we mentioned as well. Very cool thing to see, actually, just because we watched that show so recently and she pops up. And we were just talking before the recording that she is just an amazing actress. She has that, like, she almost comes across like Phyllis from The Office, you know, like just so lighthearted and kind, but like you would never cross this woman. She would not hesitate to tell them to like cut your hands off, like in an instant, you know, or whatever.
Exactly. She has such a commanding presence. Like, I don't know what it is, because she's got like such a soft, quiet demeanor, but it's that like presence she brings of like, if she says to do something, you're gonna listen. She doesn't need violence. She doesn't need to intimidate you. She doesn't need to look like she can beat you up. Like, this lady just, she is like in charge and you know it.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's a great actress. I almost want to like check out stuff just that she's in, which I never do for actors or actresses, but like, man, she's good.
No, fair enough.
Yeah. So
the interesting thing that happens with her, and it's very like, it's almost like a little throwaway thing that I think, you know, we'll probably forget towards the end of the series, just because there's so much going on with the cast and the story of what the characters are happening. That was a sentence. But what we get to see a little glimpse of is that she's kind of with this military guy, and they go into this, they're dealing with two crises at the moment from their group. Number one is Joel and Ellie showing up and, you know, getting in their business. But number two is they seem to have this like spawn hole of kinds, or like some kind of sinkhole going on in this warehouse that they have, and clearly it's something to do with the infection and the zombies and the virus and all of that. But they have, you know, is it a bloater under there? Is that what we're gonna see? Is it another kind of zombie? Like, what is going on under that floor, and how is it gonna fuck people up later in the show? That's what I want to know.
Well, two predictions for this. One is it's the bloater, partially because like it's obviously something big, and then also I think in the actual like original trailer for the entire show, the bloater is like coming up from underground, and so I think this seems like it could line up with that. And the second prediction I have is locking that door, that was their solution to like, oh, we'll lock the door and come back later, is not going to be effective in the slightest. Like, bro, locking a door is not going to keep whatever the hell is coming through the floor.
I know.
So
I gotta say, like, I found that was like a stupid choice. Like, for me, it's like, I found that was the first time in the show where I'm like, would you really have done that? Because I feel like the characters really make some realistic choices in this series so far. But this one is like, these people have been living in these circumstances for a very long time. You know, she knows, she's got to know that's a very dangerous thing that's happening in there. And she's just going to ignore it like that. Like, they haven't prepped it. They're not telling people. It just seems kind of weird to me. I don't know. Maybe that's nitpicky, but like, I'm very fascinated to see what we're gonna find from there. I think you're right, now that I think back to that trailer and you mentioning the bloater, that's probably what it will be. But cool thing to keep note of.
Definitely, like, I think episode 5 is gonna be pretty wild. Well, we're kind of getting to the end. There's a few other things to talk about. There's a few more Joel and Ellie scenes, I think. So we have, what's really important, I think, is the one in the car where Ellie sort of talks, she's talking to Joel, and he's obviously like the huge downer. He's very pessimistic. And she kind of comments on his attitude of like, you know, saving the world. Like, Joel tells Tommy's backstory of how he wants to join the military, and he keeps kind of getting caught up in things that make him like a hero, or, you know, he's naively like falls into things without really thinking it through. And Ellie kind of asks him, she says, if you don't think there's hope for the world, then why bother going on at all? And Joel kind of like chides her. He's like, well, you don't know anything, right? Like, you're young. Like, what do you know of the world? But he says, basically, he does answer her though. And he says, you keep going for family. Like, that's the only thing that matters is family. And Ellie asks him outright. She's like, I'm not family. And he just, no, like, he doesn't even consider it, just a harsh no.
He's like, he says, and no, you're cargo.
Yeah, your cargo, which is even worse. Like, she is an object. So, like, I think at this point that Joel doesn't 100% believe that, but that is the stance he is taking, and that is what he's at least telling himself, is that, you know, there's no emotion here. This is a job I am doing. It's for purely for my own benefit. I have no investment. I don't care. You know, you could be a box of guns, or, you know, a car battery. I don't care. And man, like, that is such a crippling thing to hear. Like, what a dehumanizing, awful thing to have been told, especially to a kid that's just looking for any, like, no other connection in this entire world. And there's one person that she's relying on, and nope, you're cargo. So like, holy shit, like, that comes from the games, I think, quite a bit later on when they, Sarah gets brought up a bit more, and yeah. he tells Ellie, like, you know, you're not my daughter, like, kind of shit. So that's horrible. That's a gut punch. But then we get on a little bit later, and you mentioned Ellie shoots that gun, and Joel kind of has a heart-to-heart moment talking to her, and he's not very good at it, but he tries to apologize for her needing to have used it, and it kind of just, you know, it's a horrible thing that a kid your age should have to, I mean, anybody at all should not have to be in that situation, but especially a kid, and he apologizes that, you know, she had to use it, and that's just a nice mm-hmm. like, oh, you know, soft moment.
Yeah, it is. And like, building on that scene too, and when she asks him, like, or he says, like, you know, you shouldn't have to do that as a kid, and her response is, you know, well, I think she says something along the lines of, like, oh, you shouldn't either, or like, does it get any mm-hmm. easier as you get older?
Yeah.
And Joel's response is just like, no it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But like, so I really like that moment too, because he's showing vulnerability to her in a way. Like, he just stonewalls her and is like, oh, you're just cargo. You're nothing to me. But at the same time, he's willing to be like, no, it doesn't get any easier. Like, if he was having that same thought process all the way, he'd be like, oh yeah, it's fine. No big deal. Like, he is yeah. humanizing himself to her. And I'm sure you're going to get there too. But like, by the end with the jokes, like, he is laughing. And they really have like a genuine moment. And I think you're right. He's like putting on that brave face and whatnot. But there are cracks beginning to show of, like, he does have that human element and some care for her.
Exactly. Like, you know, I think when he says to her she's cargo, he's as much trying to convince himself mm-hmm. as he is trying to convince her. And, you know, as it goes on, I mean, obviously that's the trajectory of the game. We're doing it a lot quicker in a TV show that has 9 episodes as opposed to like a 30, 40 hour game. He definitely takes a lot longer of a time to start opening up a cargo line, but I think this episode did a good job of kind of like being almost like a little mini arc, and obviously we're gonna keep trending from there. But yeah, the joke scene at the end is like, that's almost a cry scene. It's just
tears
so
of happiness
sweet
this time.
Yeah, just relief, like, finally Joel, like, you ever want to yell at a character on TV because like they're just being such an idiot? He finally, like, he laughs at one of her jokes, and when they're in the sleeping bags, and I genuinely think, like, I didn't go back and double check, but I'm pretty confident that when he laughs at Ellie's joke at the end of the episode, that is the first time that present day Joel has smiled in the entire show. Like, 4 episodes in, like, I don't think he has smiled this entire time, aside from like back in flashbacks before we had Sarah, and like maybe at Bill and Frank's when things were like kind of okay with Tess, but mm-hmm, since mm-hmm. we have known Joel in his current state, he has been a very frowny man.
I think you're 100% right about that. Yeah, I mean, it's good to see, I guess, and I hope we get a few more moments of that. Mm-hmm. Although next episode I don't think we will, because if we want to talk really about how this episode ended for real, and then maybe we'll do a few quick hitters at the end. I just have a couple small notes. But so they go to bed reading this joke book, and everything is like fine. They're getting some rest. And then it turns out, Joel had actually laid some glass on the ground, and he was like, oh, it's going to be great. It's going to make some crunching noises. And if someone tries to sneak up on us, I'll be able to hear them. And Ellie's like, oh, are you sure you're going to be able to hear them? And he's like, yes, I've done this before. And then what happens? They wake up and they're being held hostage by people. And obviously he didn't hear the glass, but we know these people to be Henry and Sam, who had been mentioned, I think, by Kathleen or some of those characters earlier.
Kathleen
right?
is also looking for mm-hmm. them. Like, if they've got the two problems you mentioned before, the third problem is Henry and Sam. For whatever reason, they're hunting them down, and she clearly has a vendetta against Henry and Sam. So I'm sure that will be a large aspect of episode mm-hmm. 5 is what happened with those characters.
Yeah, and I don't feel like we 100% know that from the game either, right?
Well, I think in the game it was a little different. Like, I feel like we run into them in the game, and they're like looking to meet up with Fireflies was their thing, right? Right. Like, they had a group they were supposed to meet up with, and the group never shows up. I don't think they're ever like actively in conflict, but then we do run into those agents with them. Like, we escape through the sewers, and like they do kind of get involved in some conflict with us, but it's after we've met them in a more like peaceful situation, I think.
I wonder what their motivation will be. Like, they, I guess they still could have left this group in search of the Fireflies. Like, it could still be the same story, but it'll be interesting to see how they do Henry and Sam here going forward. But we won't spoil any more of that because some people may not have seen it yet. Gonna be cool though, for sure. And very sad. Anyway, quick hits. A couple of things I wanted to mention just before we end the episode here, and I'm sure you might have a couple more. I loved when Joel was drinking coffee back, going back to that car, and you know, he obviously had picked up some coffee from Bill's place before they left, and just Ellie's reaction. Like, I guess she just doesn't know what coffee is. Like, she hasn't really smelled it before. She's probably heard of it, but like, this is something we take for granted as something she's just never experienced. And you know, I love coffee, as you know, but Ellie smells it and she's just like, oh my God, it smells like boiled shit. It's like, that's the funniest. Or like burnt shit or something she just says, and it's like, oh my God, what a funny reaction. Like, I just love that scene.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a note about the coffee as well, as the one thing we've skipped over. Yeah. I must say, like, that's got to be some bad coffee, because she says about how bad it smells, but in my experience, like, I obviously
coffee smells good
as well. But even people who don't like the taste of coffee like the smell of coffee. It has almost like a universally like good smell. So if that coffee smells bad, like, poor Joel is drinking the dregs over here, because that must be some horrible coffee.
Yeah, but at the same time, man, I bet any coffee would just be magic for him right now. Oh, it's been years probably.
It's probably a little detail, right? Those like luxuries, like, you just have none of that in this world. And so like the crappiest cup of coffee is like amazing. And you think too, like, the amount of driving, like, Joel has hardly slept. Like, they drove all day, they camped in the woods where Joel stayed up half of it. Like, you see him, like, he's up with his gun, he's not in his sleeping bag, and then they have this massive ambush day, and then they're on the run. Like, when the hell has Joel actually been sleeping? Like, yeah, thank God he had a cup of coffee with him.
Exactly. And it's not even like they it's not even like they don't show when he's sleeping. Like, he even has a line of dialogue, which is like, you know, they're explaining their route, and he's like, yeah, I figure we'll sleep tonight, and then I'll drive all day and all night tomorrow, and then we'll make it by the next day. Like, he's already planning. Mm-hmm. He's not going to sleep the next day. Like, this is just what it comes to when you're living in the situation, you know. And he just, he's a man on a mission. He ain't going to be stopped by no sleep. especially since he's fueled so well eating 20-year-old tinned ravioli for dinner as well, which is the other thing I wanted to point out, that he drops that they're eating like old ravioli that they found.
I think he named Chef Boyardee, right?
Yeah. And then Ellie's like, oh, this guy knew what he was doing. Like, she, I don't
know. Like, oh, this guy must have been a like 5-star Michelin chef.
So funny, I'm the sure. way that she thinks Chef Boyardee is like this great chef. I love that little throwaway line, but yeah, that's my little quick hits there. I don't know if you had anything else left for the episode.
No, you hit my coffee, and yeah, the food, the Chef Party. Sam and Henry, we see their little loft that they've been hiding out with the superhero pictures, which are tragic. But I think they have those like tins of like beans or something. And I do remember like that being a thing in the game where they like hide out for a couple days, like waiting for the rest of Henry and Sam's group. And they're like, don't worry, like, we've got beans. And Joel and I are like, oh my God, beans. And it's like a big like, you know, they're almost like having like a feast, and they're like, you know, connecting over this food.
100%.
Yeah, just same kind of idea as the coffee, right? Like, you're just so like strapped for any kind of luxury or like, you know, nice good that isn't just a like life necessity and nothing else.
Yeah. Crazy to live there. I'm very glad this is all hypothetical, you know. I'll continue to say that throughout this whole series.
I know. I'm really glad that after we're recording here, we're gonna go over like play some board games, order a pizza with our friends. What a different world.
And the pizza will have been made like today, not like
that's right. And it will be driven to the house. No one will have put in any effort whatsoever to have acquired this pizza, aside from maybe arguing about what flavor is the best.
Exactly. So, well, we're going to get together and go eat some pizza and play some games. That's going to be fun. Thank you all for joining us for this review of The Last of Us Episode 4. Of course, we will be back for Episode 5, 6, 7, 8, and surprisingly 9. So look forward to those in the future. But until those episodes, remember, this has been Cloud Control, the gaming and sometimes TV review podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough. And we'll see you on the next episode.